Sneakers and comedy? That's what's coming up on The Art of Bombing, episode 188.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Welcome to a brand new episode of The Art of Bombing. Dan Bublitz Jr. here with you, as always, as it is my podcast, The Art of Bombing Podcast. It is Tuesday, February 2nd, 2021. I hope everybody had a fantastic week. We have a great episode for you today. My guest is a Portland-based comedian, Bjorn R.G. We had a great conversation. I do have to give you some warning about the conversation. I did have some technical issues throughout the when we were recording. My internet, for whatever reason, went out. So there's going to be a weird transition. And believe me, you'll know. You'll totally get why it went from one. We were talking about one thing to we're talking about something else. I do apologize for that. That's what happens with technology. It can just do that. But either way, it was still a great episode, and we talked a lot of things. One of the major things we talked about, aside from comedy, obviously, is Bjorn taught me about sneakers. I did not realize that sneakers was such a big deal, and so we did talk a little bit about that. But there's a lot of great comedy-related stuff in this episode as well. Now, before we get to this episode, this conversation, let's talk about a few things. We've still got the March Bombness contest going on. That is, I'm on the search. I'm on the search for the best bombing stories. And all the details for that contest are on the website at artofbombingpod.com/contests. I'm going to be giving away a $50 gift card. The idea is that, with March Madness, I want to be putting these bombing stories head to head. You can call in to the Bomb Squad hotline, which is available on the website. If you go check out all the rules for the contest, the number's there, but you can call in with your story, and then we're going to do random. It's going to be a random bracket style. And, ultimately the winner's going to win a $50 gift card and be a guest on a future episode of the podcast. The only rules are, is if you've been on the podcast, you can't be in the contest. But other than that, so if you haven't, and I know there's a lot of comics out there that haven't, and if you know comics that might have a good story that haven't been on the podcast, tell them about the contest. It'd be real cool. And then I have this week on February 3rd, which would be tomorrow night, I'm doing a clean Zoom show. Lisa Evanson and I, she is another Minneapolis-based comedian, and we are doing a virtually clean show. We're co-producing this new monthly show, and our first show is tomorrow at 8 p.m. Central Time. You can go to danbublitz.com to get the information. Tickets are pay what you want, and all the money that we make at the door just split up with the comedians on the show, and there's some fantastic comics that are going to be on the show. All right, now, I think that's enough business. You know, before we get into the conversation, last thing, make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to the podcast. Definitely, definitely, definitely go check out our YouTube page, because we're putting up clips of the videos of comics telling their bombing stories and some other content. So that's cool if you want to see the comics actually telling the stories. Go check that out. But like I said, make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Give us a nice 5-star rating. Leave a review wherever you listen to the podcast. If they allow it, we would really appreciate it here. And make sure you're checking out our content on our social medias and engage with it. Like, comment, share, do all the stuff. We got, Art of Bombing Pod is on Instagram, Twitter. We're on TikTok now. We have the YouTube page. We have the Facebook page. We also have a Facebook group. And also, if you have, I've been doing the Between Bombs where I'm talking, doing comedy tips. If there's something specific you'd like me to talk about, reach out to the podcast. You can get a hold of us through email at theartofbombingpod@gmail.com. You can go to the website, fill out the comment form. You can hit us up on social media as well. All right, that's going to do it for this intro. Now here's my conversation with Bjorn. Enjoy.
And now it's time for the stand-up soundbite.
A bear in the adult world is a large, hairy gay man, so this is not an ironic beard. I grew this to attract a mate. It's working. I bagged myself one of the ever-so-elusive ginger bears. And if growing up in Montana taught me anything, something that special comes your way. You take it home, mountain stuff it. I love dating a bear, though, you guys, because we, like, never have to worry about getting gay bashed. Like, what are they going to say to us? Nice full beard, Nancy boys. You both remind me of my father, and it's making me uncomfortable. You butt pirates. Butt pirates is like my favorite gay slur for sure. It feels like more empowering, you know? Like there's fun outfits involved. Just a couple of jack-off sparrows. Off to hit the sodomy seas. I moved here about a year ago, and the first time I came out on stage, I was like, yeah, so I'm gay, and this woman, she interrupted me, she heckled me, she was like, this is Portland, nobody cares you're gay. I didn't know what to do, because it's like supportive, yet hurtful at the same time. Just when I thought Portland couldn't get any more passive aggressive.
Have you done any virtual comedy? Or is there live comedy still out there? I guess I don't even know.
There is some, but it's hard to do it. And I've just personally chosen not to, and just kind of like focus on podcasting instead of live comedy for now.
Yeah.
But before everything shut down, I was running three weekly shows.
And oh, wow.
I realized I was very close to burning out, because like when everything shut down, I was like kind of cool with it for a little while. I was like, oh, I don't have to book somebody. I don't have to book a whole bunch of people and like do promotional stuff. Like,
it's amazing how much work goes into promoting. Like people don't realize how much work's involved in producing shows, you know, promoting, booking, all that stuff.
Yeah,
it can definitely get tiresome, especially if you got, like you said, three different rooms that you're doing.
I mean, it sounds like, okay, so one was an open mic, two were book shows, and what I do is I have like a small team of people that I work with on them, so like it's not all on me, which is the way that I can pull that off. So I don't want people to think.
Well, there's some people that do that all by themselves. And it's like, hats off to them.
Yeah.
But, you know, I used to produce quite a bit. I haven't really did much since I moved to the cities, but I've did a handful of things, but nothing like steady. It's been a while. So, which is fine, because sometimes it's a nice break, because the pandemic's definitely, I've definitely put more time into my podcast since the pandemic started.
Yeah.
Working on like branding and everything like that. So,
yeah.
Nice to have that other time. What's your podcast about?
So, I have three that I'm doing. Because I didn't do them all. One of them I was already working on and I was about to launch it anyways. And it just like, I just ended up having a lot of time. So one of them is called Size 10. It's where a friend and we talk about sneakers.
Oh, okay. Is that a pretty popular podcast?
It's gaining popularity. Like it's pretty new.
And I'm not trying to sound like condescending or anything. I just know a lot of people are into sneakers, and I didn't realize how much people are into sneakers.
It's crazy.
It's something new that I've discovered. And it's funny because I've learned that more and more from listening to All Fantasy Everything, which is, you know, Sean Jordan's on that. And then Ian Carmel, who is from the Oregon area or whatever. But they talk about sneakers and shoes all the time. And I'm like, people are really into this stuff.
Yeah, I was on a show with he showed up and guested on it, and like I remember looking around and I was like, oh man, it was cold out, and so I wore like boots, and I felt overshined because everyone else on the show and like Ian was like, yeah, Nike just sent me these, and I was just like, what? Like, oh, I should have brought some heat. Like, I didn't realize the kind of show I was on.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to have to up my sneaker game. I don't – I personally like barely have shoes. I own very few pairs of shoes. And like my fiance gives me shit about this all the time because she has, you know, pairs and pairs and pairs of shoes. And I'm like, I have, you know, regular sneakers, running sneakers. And of course, my running sneakers are my nicest sneakers because they don't get used.
Yeah, I know. I got the fat guy running shoes. I was into those for a minute. For instance, like, oh, these.
Yeah,
these are comfy for walking.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't hardly do that either. So it basically boils down to I have just one everyday pair of sneakers and they're like dress shoes for.
Okay,
that's about. You know, about it. I think I've got more now because I've got a few extra pairs now, mostly nice. Since I've been with her. But before her, I literally had like two pairs of shoes.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, mine's almost embarrassing. It's about, like my collection right now. The weird part is like I liked it. I liked collecting shoes because I could, you know, put it together in an outfit for the stage. And if you start paying attention right now, it's almost hacky to wear a pair of Jordan 1s in your special, in my opinion,
because oh, really?
Like, every special that's come out in the last like 2 years, someone's wearing a pair of like Jordan 1s in just like a color. Like, it's crazy.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, are the Jordan 1s, because I don't know my sneakers, does that mean like the original Jordans that came out like in the 80s, the late 80s?
Yeah.
Early 90s?
Yep.
Is that what you mean by that? Okay. Oh, I'm not completely dumb then. I do remember them. I had a good friend in school back when we were in school, like when the Jordans came out, he worked his ass off to buy a pair. And then for like every year that they came out with the new pair, he, you know, that's pretty much the only reason he worked while we were in school was so he could save money to buy the new Jordans when they came out.
Yeah.
I just remember him having like just pairs and pairs of Jordans.
It's a weird thing. It's just like you just keep going on to the next thing and the next thing. And it's just like I just bought a pair. I just got a pair. And I was just like, I put it on my shelf and I haven't really worn them because I'm not really going anywhere as much. Like I go to my office and home and then that's it.
Can you display them then like collectibles? Is it like
I have them in boxes.
Going into Foot Locker or what?
My friend who I do the podcast with, I went to IKEA with him and we bought these special shelves for his wall so he can display all of his like Yeezys and his Jordans and like I'm not quite there yet. I kind of keep them in boxes, but I probably should. I have too many to really display right now. Like I just have this huge,
it's ridiculous.
It's a little bit of a problem, but it's,
hey, we all have our things though. We all have our things. Yeah. I have tons of comic books. That's my thing.
Oh really?
Yeah. I'm a comic book guy. So I like get it. Having the things. Shoes are for me though. It's one of the things like I've never been able to get myself to spend tons and tons of money on shoes. And I know sneakers, especially these collectible ones now, can get really insane in price.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, since you talk sneakers a lot and you know your stuff, what like a pair of Jordan 1s, what do they go for?
Oh, right now, probably like $200 if I had like one, like probably about $200. It's crazy. I don't know if you remember in quarantine, there was that documentary, the Last Dance. It was like the Jordan documentary.
Yeah.
So that,
I didn't watch it, but I know what you're talking about.
Okay. So that came out and then, and everyone's at home just looking at sneakers. So the price of Jordans went up significantly. It's like a stock. Like that's why the website that a lot of people use is StockX. And like the average price of a Jordan 1 rose at least $50 to $60, I want to say.
Wow.
Like, so now if you want like a, just a basic pair of Jordan 1, like you're not going to be able to get those at a store. You got to buy them from a reseller at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But like, yeah, the Jordan 1 is super popular, especially the high. If you get the mid, that's what I usually do. Cause I, yeah, like about $200 is what you'd be looking at spending right now if you were to.
Oh, hey, so bad. But that's still because that, I remember when they came out that they were like over, they were almost $200, I feel like, back in the early 90s, like when they were, you know, brand new. So for a shoe to like retain value just blows my mind.
It's got to be like unworn, and then there's all these factors, and it's like, yeah, like some of them are super rare, and like the game that is, I'm like almost over it, honestly. There's this sneakers app, like, so it's like an app on your phone, and you have about, you don't even, like, I will literally buy something in 2 seconds. Like I will be waiting for it to turn. I wake up at 7 and I'm just like, my payment information, everything's ready to go. And I just like hit it. I just hit buy as soon as it turns black, where it turns on, and I won't get it. Like you won't get.
Oh yeah. I actually had a friend. He just sent me, cause I have another friend that's in the shoes and he was trying to get a pair of shoes. I don't even know what they were. He just sent me a screenshot and he was like, yeah, I was trying to get these shoes for that show we're doing. And he goes, and then he was like, yeah, but I didn't get them.
Yeah. You don't get them a lot. Like I actually got a pair
of him like in a, just in a waiting, like, you know,
yeah,
a digital waiting room or whatever it is.
I have a lot of those screenshots where I'm just like, all right, I'm going to post the this and then I'm going to post the got 'em picture. Cause they send you one that says got 'em when you do get it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's like how, people that try to go to, Comic-Con feel, you know, you gotta go sit in those digital waiting rooms and then not get tickets because they sell out so damn fast.
Yeah, it's very frustrating, and it's almost like a gambling addiction where they just like give you something every once in a while, or
it's just to keep you playing.
Yeah, just to keep you playing. The crazy thing is it's like I'll enter, sometimes it's a raffle and I'm entering a raffle to buy a pair at full price. Like there isn't even a discount. It's discounted if I buy it there because it's less than on the resale market. So it's sort of worth it. And it's nice when you get a pair. Like for me personally, I don't spend thousands on one pair. I spend thousands on several pairs.
you're all like, about
let's be reasonable.
Not quality.
So like my thing is I want to get the really hype pairs that everyone's excited about for retail price. I don't want to spend the resale. Like I'm not spending $1,000 on it.
Yeah. I totally get that. That's just like with video game consoles too. Like they always release the newest one right at Christmas.
Yep.
People scramble up to buy as many as they can. And then they go online and sell them for, you know, 2 or 3 times more than what they're actually worth. And the sad thing is people will pay for them. And it's like, realize if you just wait, they will produce more.
Yeah.
And you can go to a store and pay regular price for them.
I know. I can't like, even.
I just got patience. That's all it is.
Exactly. See, that's why with video, like I'm a bit of a gamer and it's gotten worse over quarantine, like because I'm just indoors all the time. So I've started playing all these games. I stay one system behind. That's my game. So I try to stay a whole system behind. So like last week I bought a PS4, not a 5, a 4.
That's the way to do it. That's how I used to be. I used to be a huge gamer myself. And for a little while, I kept up on all the systems. But it got to be where, like, when they started coming out, you know, almost every year for a while there was like a – felt like for a while there, they were coming out, like, every other year.
you know, yeah. there wasn't a big gap. So I finally was just like, I'm done. I can't keep up with all this.
I know.
And then I eventually got too busy with comedy and I don't hardly ever play video games anyway now, but I do have, I have old consoles now. I have a 64
Then
I have, and I bought one of the Nintendo Classics, but
very cool.
Yeah, so I got more. I'm more into retro games than anything.
And that's even cool.
I keep looking at them because they're right there, yeah. right there, where I could go play them, but I hardly ever play them because I'm just busy doing other stuff.
I would be a kind of a retro gamer, I guess. I've only recently started playing the new stuff, but like in quarantine, I actually went through my favorite game of all time is Diddy Kong Racing on Nintendo 64.
Yep.
And I went and played through it once, at least, on during quarantine.
I can't remember if I have that or not. I'll have to look. I think I do. Because I ended up buying, I bought the 64 that I bought, I just bought somebody's collection. A friend of mine was moving.
Oh, cool.
And he was selling it with all the games. And I was like, hey, why not? I'll take it.
That's awesome. Yeah.
You know, he kind of offered it up to friends before he put it out on like Marketplace or anything. And I was like, you know what? Yes, I will take that because
I will take that.
two of my favorite games are on that.
What are those?
GoldenEye and Perfect Dark.
Oh,
Perfect
okay.
Dark is probably my one of my all time favorite first person shooters.
Oh, cool.
I used to play the shit out of that when I was younger. When it came out, that's like all we would do. Me and my buddy who was always buying the Jordans when we were in school.
Okay.
My gaming buddy too, after high school. And we just sit around for hours and hours and hours and play GoldenEye and then Perfect Dark.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I think I have GoldenEye. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I still have that one.
Yeah. The cool thing with the Perfect Dark game was that you had to, it wasn't necessarily cool then because it added another $30 to the game, but you had to get that to really get the full experience of the game. You had to buy an expansion pack for the 64.
Was it that little red thing that like went in the front and you had the little tool to pry it out?
Yep. You had to change that where it basically changed like the graphics card. Essentially, it expanded it. I don't know what it did exactly. I just know that without it, most of the features of that game were you couldn't use them. So it was like useless. So the game was like $60 when it came out. Then you had to spend another $30 on that stupid expansion pack.
Basically
making it one of the first games that was $100 to play.
That's so crazy. Like the price of games hasn't really changed. I was thinking about that the other day. I was like, God, I paid like $60, I think, for Mario Kart 64. And it's actually more now if I wanted to buy it.
Yeah, they've gone up quite a bit. Yeah, it's crazy. But yeah, I think that's the way to do it with stay a system behind. That's something I would do.
When all your friends are upgrading, you're like, hey, I will give you cash for your old system.
Yeah, if you don't want that, send it my way.
Yeah, I just got off my PS3 and now I'm on to the PS4. So it's like... just like a whole new world of games I've never played. I'm like telling my friends, I'm like, oh my God, have you played this? They're like, are you kidding me? BioShock, Bjorn, you're starting that game now. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It's so cool. Like, I just never played them.
Are you into the online gaming?
I not really, because most of the systems I'm on are like they stop doing service for.
Well, that's what I mean. That's why I'm like, that's the only disadvantage to being a system behind, because as soon as everybody jumps on that new system, they're playing online there, and then it there's no one to really play with as far as the old systems go.
Exactly. I'm more of a I do have a Switch, and I got that like a year ago. So that was the first time I was like, whoa, I can buy games as they come out, because I'm more of like a childish gamer, I guess. I like 3D platformers and platformers the most. That's mostly what I play. The first person shooters is kind of like a world I've not been in since GoldenEye, honestly, or like
I used to 64. Be big into that with like the Xbox One, and that I used to play pretty heavy because I got into that. And then like Left 4 Dead was another game I really liked. And
I remember that.
That was just a fun game. But like I pretty much play all games for the most part. I mean, I'm not there's some games that I just never got into. Like, never been big, super big into like RPGs, but
yeah,
everything else pretty much I was down to play.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. Especially the one thing I liked about the like GoldenEye and those first person shooters is the multiplayer, where you could like have a bunch of friends playing. Same mm-hmm. with like Mario Kart when they
yeah.
you know introduced that like four player, you know, the split screen stuff where you could have
yeah.
a bunch of people playing all together. You know, the online stuff is cool too, but it was like it was just something cool about having all mm-hmm. your friends in one area all playing a game instead of how it used to be where maybe one or two of your friends were playing it. Yeah. Wait to take turns.
Yeah. Passing the controller.
Passing yeah. the controller back and forth. Yep. Yep. Waiting for your turn to play.
Exactly. Yeah. Or like, and then someone would be too good and you're just like, oh, come on. They never die ever.
Yeah. I remember doing that kind of shit at arcades, going and watching people play and trying to play games and stuff at yeah. an arcade. Cause like where I went to high school, the mall was like right across the street from our high school and there was an arcade. So like at lunch,
oh, cool. we'd
sneak over there and go play video games, or after school, go hang out at this arcade and play the, you know, like Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, that one guy that was super good. So they pretty much got to play the whole time.
Yeah. They're just like, all right, I guess we're watching you play.
Yeah. Yep. Guess we're just hanging out.
I'm gonna go play the boring game that nobody wants to play.
yeah. I see there's a shooting game that nobody likes.
Yeah, but it's real loud, so I'm gonna go play that.
Yeah,
I just remember those games being super loud. Like it just be the loudest game in the. You walk in and it's just like booming, and yeah, I don't know.
yeah, just super obnoxious.
Yeah.
That's funny. Now I see too, you were just in Montana.
Yeah. Or,
yeah. So you're from Montana, is that
I'm
right?
I'm from Montana. Yeah, yeah. That's oh, okay. where I grew up.
Okay, right on. I have a cousin that lives out in that area. He lives cool. down in Lakeside.
Wild.
Lake, Lakeville. Is it Lakeside? I think it's Lakeside actually. It's down just by south Kalispell? Of Kalispell. Yep.
Yep. Yep. That's Lakeside. I'm from Whitefish, Montana. That's where I
yeah.
grew up.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I've seen that. And that's why I was bringing it up, because I was just out there. I went to Whitefish. I went and checked the town
oh, cool.
when I was out in Montana just over the summer. My cousin actually got married and they had a, you know, socially distant small wedding thing. You know, they were very safe about it. I feel like you gotta
have to preface it. You're like, oh, we'll
preface it. Yeah. Like people are like, what? You went to a wedding during a pandemic? It's like it was outside, socially distanced.
Right.
Everybody
so much
wearing,
Purell. That's all they gave out.
Wearing masks. We didn't have yeah. alcohol. We had sanitizer. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Like exactly. It was an open that's sanitizer bar. You could get
exactly
sanitizer like, cocktails.
People will hate on you. But yeah, so we were out. We went to Montana for a week. We made a trip out of it. So we did, went to his wedding, but then went to a bunch of other stuff, and
yeah.
Whitefish was one of the places we went and checked out, which was it was just really cool.
It is. It's a cool town. It's beautiful. It's just like it's so expensive now. I don't think I could go back. I couldn't buy I couldn't buy a house there. Like it's just impossible.
Oh,
it's so expensive.
We were looking at some of the properties, especially around like the lakes and stuff.
Yeah, forget Damn. About it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's
about
crazy.
Right. Did you start comedy in Montana, or did that come later?
No, I've never done stand up in Montana. I've done it in I think North and South Dakota, Minnesota, like Wisconsin, a few other places. And then but I started in Minnesota. That's where I started.
Oh, okay. You started in Minnesota. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was actually supposed to go to Billings for a corporate event this weekend. And then, well, now that got postponed till 2021. So, yeah. Yeah. I was surprised that they were still going through with it. And it literally just got postponed yesterday.
I mean, you went to Montana, right? Like, nobody is doing anything. Like,
I know. Yeah, I know. It was really weird, because in Montana, it was very, it was more like depending on what town you were in, really determined whether or not, you know, each town was handling things differently.
Yeah.
Like one town be super strict. And if you weren't wearing a mask, they wouldn't let you in the building, you know, that kind of thing. And then you go to another town and nobody gave a shit.
Yeah. Nope. This is Montana.
So it was very odd because it was like no like state, you know, there was no like standard. It was just very random.
Yeah. It's, I went back the last time I was back there. I definitely it was crazy. The further I got away from like Oregon, like as I was getting to the edge, it was like, OK. And then I was in Washington and it was like super lax. And then I was in Spokane and it was like crazy again. And then Idaho, no one cared. Montana, nobody cared. It was like it wasn't even a thing that was happening. It was very, very weird. And I got very uncomfortable with it. Honestly, I was like,
yeah, yeah, that gets scary. I was kind of getting a little worried about it, too, because they're starting to have some spikes and things like that in Montana now. Like,
yeah,
I mean, it's a little worse.
The issue is in Montana, there's not – the hospitals are so small. So, like, that's what's going on. As my mom – I was talking to my mom, and she was telling me that, like, yeah, they will literally turn you away because they don't have space at all. They're, like, shipping people to other places like here that have it because they just don't have the space because they're just tiny little hospitals.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And I'm sure there's not as many – I mean, there's a lot of little towns out there. And then I froze up and then I got totally kicked out. And then my internet, I couldn't even find my network on my computer.
Oh,
I was like, whoa. So,
yeah, I have mine hardwired in.
Yeah,
that did happen a couple times and I got real pissed and I never wanted it to happen again. So I always check my internet connection. You froze up and I was like, is that me? Like, and I just real quick pulled it up and I was like, nope, my internet is still going solid. I did a test on it and everything. And then I was like, oh, this is live. I should be entertaining. So I just started telling this story.
It's not live. We're just recording only. So
I don't know if you're going to get it. You're going to hear about the shooting that I walked past. There was a police. Like this whole intersection by my house was blocked on my walk home.
Oh my God, that's funny because you know I might have to leave it in. We'll see. I may take some of that out or I may leave it in and just do like a preference, let people know what's going on. But why me talking about we're talking about COVID? Are you talking about a shooting?
Well, I was like, oh, I should say something. All right, let's Bill Burr Monday morning podcast this thing.
suddenly the Art of Bombing is no longer my podcast. Now you have to
take over. Start telling stories about other stuff.
The pressure's on. Yeah, I've never had that happen. Like I said, I don't have mine hardwired in because of where my computer's located, but I've never had an issue. You know, I upgraded my internet, my Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And I've never had an issue since till just now.
I bought a thing like this ridiculous thing and it's got right in there. And then I bought like a 40 or 50 foot cord because I'm actually pretty far from my router, so I was having issues. So
yeah,
I just bought a huge cord and wired it in here.
Yeah, that's been my issue. So my studio's upstairs, my router's downstairs, but I'm still like I'm like right above it.
You know? So that should be no problem.
You know what I mean? So it's not like I'm on the opposite side of the house. Like I'm like kitty corner. It's basically I'm on the other side of the room. But upstairs, so I'm still should be pretty close. So I don't know what happened. Like I said, I've never had that happen before, but first time for everything.
Right. And then you'll figure it out.
Exactly. I'll figure out what's going on here. That's a good time. This is a good time to transition into what this podcast is about. Bombing. Like I just bombed this recording by exiting.
Leaving. And you learn from it.
Exactly. Well, it's a good thing that, you know, a lot of people, a lot of guests and stuff, if that would have happened, they wouldn't have known what happened. They wouldn't know what to do. But you're like, well, I guess I'm on this podcast myself for a while.
I guess I'm going to be by myself. It's from all of my experience with podcasting via like Zoom and or just doing shows this way. After months of doing that, you just kind of learn. It's like, all right, well. There was early on, my friends and I were doing, we transferred one of my shows to just doing it. We did a live on Instagram and we would rotate who hosted it. And I hate updating. That's I'm only like 35, so it's not like I'm not that old, but like I hate updating, and I hadn't updated Instagram, and so mine wasn't working properly. And but I was like trying to get people to come in, and like, but everyone could see my face as I'm just like, this fucking piece of shit just burns, like I'm just like losing my, just losing my goddamn mind trying to get, and then we like, it was like, okay, like we're having fun talking. And then we switched to the next person. I'm like, are you, this better not? And everyone was just dying laughing apparently. And I'm just in this alone room, like losing my mind at technology.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, update.
That sounds like something I would do.
Like, oh, we saw.
I've got mine on auto update, so that helps. Yeah. I just like auto update everything. But yeah, that's definitely.
Yeah, you have to be up to date.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So I've been listening to your podcast, actually. Sorry, I became a bit of a fan over quarantine, too. I like found it randomly, and it's really fun to listen to people's stories. So sorry, I just
put you. Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm glad people are enjoying it, because I enjoy hearing them, too. Because for me, it's nice to know that I'm not the only one, you know, that
right.
thinks about it. And it gives it like it's a different perspective on comedy.
Yeah.
So that's always a good thing. Was that your bombing story?
No, that was not my bombing story. Like, God, no.
I said we transitioned to the bombing. Oh. I was like, and then you're like, well, there was this one time on Instagram Live.
No.
Was that it?
I have bombed way harder than that. Like, my life is not that good. No.
I was going to say, yeah, if your worst bomb is not being able to figure out Instagram, that's not really bombing. That's just getting old.
Right? Yeah. It's just an age thing. Get over it, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
No. Okay. My bombing story is, so first, I started in Minnesota. Then I moved to Las Vegas. And then I moved from Las Vegas to here. So I've done stand up in all those places. And a few years ago, I went back to Vegas as for the first time, actually, as like not a person who lives there, but like as a guest, and for my brother's 21st birthday. And while I was there, I called up a friend at a club and was like, hey, can I get a guest spot? And I got a guest spot on like a Friday night late show. And I was like, oh, this will be fun. And my brother likes stand up. And my mom was there, who had never seen me do stand up ever. I think she'd seen clips. And my brother's friends were there, and like I got all them tickets, and like we went to this comedy show at a comedy club in Vegas, and I was really excited. I also like I had been on a string of wins too. Like I had been having great set after great set. I was just like, got this, no problem. Can't wait to show this booker and all my friends that like work at this club how much better I've gotten.
What club was it? Out of curiosity.
It was this club. It's no longer there. It was in the D Casino called Jokesters. My friend Don Barnhart owns it or ran it. He's kind of an old school name guy. Really cool guy. And so he got me the spot, which was rad. And I was so excited, and I had so much confidence going into this set. And right away, another thing is I am gay, and I talk about that a lot on stage. And I had all this great new material that I had been working on, and it was working great in Portland, and like I did it in Eugene and a few other places. So I was just like, it works everywhere. There was a guy in the front row, and he had on like a big Texas hat, and he was there with his little wife, and he was not having me at all. Like, so much so that he had to vocalize that like he was not okay with my lifestyle. So I engaged him. I was just like, oh, you're not like he was like protesting at one of my just they're silly, goofy jokes. They're not even that gross. And so I engaged him, and like we start talking, And I find out that he's from Texas, and he kind of threatens me. He's like, about like talks about having his gun or something like that. And then security kind of shows up around him. Like, did you just say you have a gun in a comedy club? He didn't. I got that information out of him. But then I was just kind of like, this isn't going anywhere. And so I kind of went back into my act, and I was about to do my closer. And then he says to his wife, and I'm sorry, you could bleep this out if you need to. He's like, and loud enough for me to hear on stage, he's like, when's this faggot going to get off stage?
Oh,
and
damn.
It was at that point that I saw red, and I just, I don't know. Like, I've not lost it on stage before like that, but I like really, I was so mad. I was so upset. I forgot everything I was doing. I kind of fumbled, and it was just this weird moment of like, you know, where like, I didn't know what my jokes were. I didn't know. I went from very confident to not very confident anymore. I was fumbling around, and then I kind of got my bearings again. And then I did my last, I did my closer, which was, it's a blowjob joke. Let's be real. And I got off stage. And I was very, very upset that like that was the set that my mom watched me do, and like my brother was there, and like the booker and everybody was there. I was really upset. I ended up later watching it, and it wasn't as bad as it was in my head, but in my head it was not fun, and it was very, very upset.
It's one of them situations where, you know, in the process or in the heat of it, I guess, in the heat of the moment, it's hard to tell if you're doing good or not because you're so angry, especially when you called you a, you know, derogatory name. Like at that point, you know, I could see totally like blacking out and losing it and getting angry, because it's almost like, it's like, you know, the shaking up a bottle, eventually it just, you know, the cap explodes or whatever, that the situation just kept getting heated, you know, with him heckling for one thing, and then it going to threatening everybody with a gun, to using derogatory names, calling, like, yeah, I could see where in the moment that feels like it's going bad.
And I'm not gonna lie, like, usually I can shake off a bomb pretty quick, like I'll just like, you know, do another set the next night. That one took me like probably, I mean, like, I was booked on some other things, so I had to, thank God, because I would not have chosen to go back on stage as quickly as I was booked to.
Yep.
Like, if I was like, I was like, oh, maybe you should cool it. Like, I got back to Portland and then had to, like, it was like 2 days, and then I had to do a set. And it ended up, that set was, it went great, but I definitely had my confidence shaken for like probably a good couple weeks. I didn't have that same level of confidence that I did going into that set.
I could totally see that. But yeah, that's the worst too. Like, that's why I like, excuse me, when you're early on into comedy, we're all like, oh yeah, we invite all our friends and family, come watch me do comedy, you know, blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
The longer you do it, you're like, I don't want people to see me, because I don't, what if something bad happens? And then when they do come see you, something bad happens, and it's like, oh yeah, shit. This is what they think I do.
Yeah.
They don't take me serious with this comedy thing, and this is just giving them more fuel. Giving them more evidence, more weight to their goddamn arguments.
Right? That I'm wasting my life on this.
Exactly. Oh, man. That's tough. What did your friend that booked you, how did he, like, did he say anything afterwards? Like, was there any?
He gave me a couple extra drink tickets.
He was like, you're going to need this.
Well, he's like, here you go. And then and then he offered to delete the video that he's like, you probably don't want the video of this, do you? And so he sent me a photo of my performance. I actually posted it. It's like on Facebook or something somewhere. I did post it.
That's funny. That's at least he sympathized. And
oh, yeah.
You know, he was like, oh, you need more drink tickets after that.
It's like, here you go.
It was, instead of being like, oh, well, I can't ever have you back here again.
Right. Yeah. Well, the thing that was interesting was, like, going into that set, I was like, my plan, I'll tell it, my master plan was to like, I'm like, all right, I'm going to crush. And then I'm like, hey, have me come for a week. And after that, I was like, I am so glad I wasn't on like day one of the week. That would have been horrible.
Oh, man, that would have been a bad start to the week. I've definitely been there where that first show is, goes bad. And then all you can think is it's got to get better from here, though. I mean,
that's true.
So
that's
it gives you that outlook where, where it's like it's got to get better. It can't get worse, can it?
Like, how can it get any worse than this?
And then it does.
Yeah, and you're like, and you're like, oh, boy.
I shouldn't have said anything.
New rock bottom.
Why did I put that out into the universe?
Yeah.
It's like, shame on me.
Right?
Oh, man.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and that's also tough, like, when you go back to places and bomb, you know, like where you're, you know, like when you spend time in a scene and you like, you get respect from your peers or whatever, and then you move away. And then even like you come back and they're like, oh, I moved to a better scene. Must be a better comic, blah, blah, blah. And then that happens. It's just like, oh,
yeah. I did go to a comedy festival at the beginning of this year in Vegas. So I did go back to Vegas and I had good sets on those, which was
Good. That's good.
But I kind of, you start to like tailor yourself towards a different for one scene or another. And like, have you ever performed in Vegas? Have you done that?
Yeah, actually, I was just there a couple weeks ago for the World Series of Comedy.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. So, but I'd performed prior there. I've did a couple, not in any of the clubs, but you know, I did some like mic/shows like off the strip and things like that. And actually while I was there, I did Rick's Smokin' Barbecue.
I did that one the last couple times. Like that's a good one.
That
one's really fun.
I did that while I was in Vegas and then during the World Series of Comedy. And then I did some other stuff at like a, I don't know, it was like a Mexican restaurant. And so,
I remember that open. Was it an open mic?
I think that was actually a book show, the one that I did.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was a Jack Slammy thing.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I know.
In his room. I mean, this was a while ago. like years ago. So
no, I think he's still doing stuff.
I mean, when I did hit that room, I don't know if room's still going. That was like years ago when I did that particular room. And then the other one was a bar, and I forget the name of it, but I did that a couple years ago. But that was like way off the strip. And that was a little brutal because that was like an open mic with like a showcase. We're like, so they like featured two comics at the end. And it would have been fine, but it was like a Packers bar, I think.
Okay.
Or a Steelers bar. I can't remember. I think it was the Steelers, actually. And the show started like right after the game, but like they lost. And so like everybody was in a pissy mood. I mean, they were upset because their team just got lost. And it was like pretty close, I think. Like so like it was even more made them even more angry, you know. Like,
yeah.
They were just put them in such a sour mood, and then it's like comedy, and so they were already it's all those little things added to it.
Right. Oh yeah, it's so like that's comedy's the only thing where that happens. Like nobody else goes through that where like they're like, hey, how about let's set it up the hardest way possible and then that's where you have to do it. Like let's make you do this in the least ideal circumstances. Like nobody ever does that.
Not really. Well, and then, you know, and it was funny too, because that situation, I had some friends there because we went to Vegas, my fiance and I, to meet some of her friends. And then I have some friends that live in Vegas now, comics that have moved there and stuff like that.
Okay.
So I had a few people that came to watch the show and hang out, but like the open mic, by the time, because the open mic started so late, and then by the time I got up there, like, there wasn't really a big crowd by that time, like, because this is like on a Sunday night too, so like most people were done, so it was just mostly comics and stuff hanging out, so typical what you're used to going to like an open mic.
Absolutely.
Essentially.
Yeah,
I still had fun.
I just found Vegas to be one of the hardest cities that I've performed in.
Well, and I think that's because, Vegas has a lot of clubs, but they don't really help curate talent, local talent, because, and I understand where they're coming from in the sense that they have people that are coming from all over the world that are touristy, and they're paying top dollar for entertainment. They need to give them that entertainment that they're paying for, you know.
Absolutely.
And it's sometimes hard to do with a local scene, you know, while incorporating a local scene. Like, I feel like it's very different. Like, Vegas is a different scene than, you know, like Minneapolis or even LA, where like the clubs, it can help, you can get into the clubs, even though they're celebrities going to these clubs. Starting out as a nobody in LA, you can still work your way into those clubs. Where in like Vegas, I don't feel like it's really hard to work your way into the clubs there.
It is
the main clubs anyway.
Yeah, they're like, they fly in the openers, like they'll fly them in and put them up in the hotel.
Yeah,
and so it's like, forget about it.
Well, I was at the World Series of Comedy, and they had some good panels and some Q&A with some of the industry people, and some of the people that came were bookers, like the booker for the Jimmy Kimmel Comedy Club was there, the booker of Brad Garrett's Comedy Club was there, and they were basically saying, like, even to be the MC at our club, you need to have credits. I mean, that's basically TV credits. Like, that's what I mean. They're like, you gotta have TV credits. Like, everybody that's on our show could be a headliner.
Yeah.
From the MC to the headliner.
Yeah.
You know, so like being a local, like in a local scene like that, it's gonna be near impossible to get in on those good clubs like that.
It really is. Like, I don't know if it's still open, but they opened a Comedy Cellar in, I remember this right when the last time I went there, it was in the Rio. They opened, I think it's closed now because the Rio sold.
I think the whole Rio closed.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But what I heard from all of my friends there is that you had to be passed at the one in New York to do anything on that stage.
Oh, I believe it. Yeah, because even them, a lot of the comics, a lot of the people I saw in the lineups from that were, and they were doing more showcase stuff, like kind of similar to what they probably do in New York, but it was all comics that you would see on their lineups in New York.
So yeah, that was an interesting thing that I was like, oh, wow. It's
definitely hard to progress when you can't even, I mean, even to like do a guest spot or MC, like you can't even get in for that at a lot of those. Because even a lot of those main clubs, they don't even do guest spots. You know?
I know.
they're very vocal about it.
Yeah. They're very proud of that.
Yeah. Like, I have a friend that lives in Vegas now. He does a lot of stuff at a lot of clubs locally, but he worked his ass off before he even moved to Vegas. You know what I mean? Like, he got to the point where he was already in at these clubs before he even moved to Vegas.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. You don't want to like work your way. You can't work your way up, really.
No, he was already established and already working at a lot of these clubs, you know, at least once or twice a year. Like, he would do the Laugh Factory. He would do Brad Garrett's, you know, and some of the other clubs. So he was already doing that, like, you know, and, you know, he got to the point where, well, and before the pandemic hit, he was doing like headlining cruises and stuff. So like he didn't have a ton of like credits, like TV credits, but he had a lot of really good festival credits, and he won, like, you know, he won the World Series of Comedy and,
and
other festivals that he did really good in and things like that. So like he really, you know.
Yeah,
he worked his ass off. That's the only way to say it, is he worked his ass off and was already in those clubs. Now he lives in L.A., but in Las Vegas.
Vegas.
But it was like he was already working that stuff. But it's like you said, it's you have to have those credits to even be considered for.
Yeah.
Even the MC.
Just to be the MC. It's insane. That's so funny. Like you just reminded me of something. I bombed a audition for Carnival Cruises that I did like really bad. And I'm so glad I did, because I'm secretly grateful for a lot of these bombs. Cause it like caused me to make a choice that like I was like, yeah, I'm going to do cruises. And I bombed this audition so bad. I was just auditioning to be the MC, which is actually a good spot on the cruises, because then you're on it for like a while, whereas mm-hmm. they rotate the headliners, I believe. Yeah. And so like you can make decent money doing it. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to do that. And so I like got this audition, and the person before me that was in the audition, they didn't tell, like, he didn't understand that we were doing round robin host. There was no host.
Oh, okay.
So every comic was bringing up the next comedian.
Yep.
He forgot about that. His last joke, his closer didn't work. He got mad at the audience, dropped the mic on the floor, and left the stage.
Wow.
So like, I ran out.
A live audition? Was this like in Portland or something?
No, this was in Vegas. This was in Vegas.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah. I couldn't believe that he did that. But, you know, comics be bitches sometimes.
Yeah. 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 Probably trying to be nice, but you're right.
So I like run out. I run out and I like grab the mic, bring myself up, I guess, introduce myself. But I was kind of I was thrown way off by that. I was upset with him. My rhythm was totally thrown by having to introduce myself. And then I did this thing where like, cause I had a callback and I did I just wires crossed and screwed up like a punchline. I said a punchline too early. Mm-hmm. I got a little upset about that. And then I like kind of backpedaled and just started fumbling. And I remember just looking out at just blank stares, and I'm like lit, and there's like high stakes on this one because I wanted to do really well. Mm-hmm. And I kind of forgot the rest of my jokes. I guess this sounds like a theme. It's not a theme. It's happened to me only a couple of times. But I just was like, all right, I guess that's me. And then I like beautifully brought the next person up. Like, and teed them up very nicely.
That's good. That's the way you come back. But so did anybody from your audition get anything out of it then?
No, I don't think they got any. They didn't even take anybody off of that.
Yeah, one. I didn't even realize they did that, like live auditions like that. It was
a really random thing where it was like they were expanding their crew. I think it was either Norwegian or Carnival. I can't remember which. Okay. They were like expanding into a new market and like had all these new boats that they were doing. And so they had this like
kind of speed up the process probably.
Yeah. And so I kind of like, it was like the first round of them. And then I would have gone to LA and do another audition.
Gotcha. Okay. So it was almost kind of like a talent search type thing where where they kind of do like regions and then they are like cities and then they go to regions or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've did stuff like that before. But now when you're bombing, what or a joke bombs, what goes through your mind when you know it's going bad while you're on stage?
Oh, I mean, I used to get upset about it, but most of the time I'm pretty like lately I'm more present and I'll just like be aware that it's not working and kind of just play with it until I get a laugh. Like I'll usually flip it and make fun of it or whatever, you know, just like you have like your savers and some of that. Yeah. I feel like I don't bomb as much because in my opinion, I think bombing is kind of like an internal thing. It's like something that you choose, as crazy as that sounds. Like if you, you allow yourself to bomb, you allow the audience to dictate how you feel. That's when you really bomb. But if you can if you're the one creating, like, you're supposed to be the one creating the fun energy, mm-hmm. and you just have to adjust in the moment and figure out what people want. And it's like I'm a little bit more present now. I bombed a lot more when I only had like an act, and I would do that act and I would be like, if you like it or not, I guess. But mm-hmm. now it's kind of a little bit more like, I don't do the, my jokes are a little more loose now. They're a lot more loose, less scripted, and more just like giving, I guess I give more of what they're looking for. Like, you know, if they're not into my material, and then I'll sort of weave in and out of that more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
That's just time on stage, honestly, and different audiences and like getting booked on shows where like there's no audience. Like, some of the best paying shows I've done have been with no audience, like in Vegas, where I would get a spot and it'd be like $100 to do 20 minutes at 3 a.m. for a bunch of not even a bunch of people, like just like 4 people. And you're like, well, the jug band that went before me went long. So like, here's 20 minutes of me, you know, talking about relationships.
Like, at 3 a.m.
At 3 a.m. Like, I'm tired, you're tired, let's fucking do this.
Everybody just wants to leave and go find somebody to get it on with.
yeah, exactly. It's like, y'all are just here to sober up before you drive home.
Right. Oh, man, that's great. The bumming of bombing, the dreadful feeling you feel that you get when you bomb. How long does that typically last for you, and how has it changed over the years?
Ooh, that's so like I said, that one bomb, when I got heckled, that one took me, I would say, like 2 or 3 weeks before I really, really got my confidence back, I guess, got my.
Yeah, some hurt more than others, for sure. Mm-hmm.
But most of the time, that's the other reason. That's part of the secret reason why I have 3 shows that I do weekly, is I don't have time to wallow in it, because I've got another show I've got to do tomorrow, mm-hmm. or in 2 days or next week. So, and I've gotten to this point where, like, I don't know what it is, but like I run an open mic and it starts at 10, and I like to run the second half of the open mic when there's just no more energy. I love being, I guess, like the cruise director, like being the guy that just like brings the energy to the room and creates that fun energy and that fun space. Mm-hmm. And so I am in a lot of, so I don't feel like I bomb as much, because I'm there creating. I'm having fun most of the time under these horrible circumstances for comedy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, sometimes that is the key, is you got to make the best of it, you know, make the best out of the worst situations. And then sometimes that ends up becoming a better show, because you're forced to step outside your element, and then you're giving the audience ends up getting an experience, as opposed mm-hmm. to just seeing your act. They're getting an experience that no other audience is going to get. It's only the people there in that room get to experience that with them. So it's kind of a cool thing that can happen. How do you analyze your sets after you bomb to try to figure out what went wrong or how you can do better?
I just do another set, honestly, because if it's bumming me out, I'll avoid it for like a few weeks. Like the one where I got heckled, I didn't listen to it for like a month. And then mm-hmm. like a month later, I listened to it and I was like, what? That was the set? Like, it didn't even really make sense to me in retrospect. So like, if I give myself a couple weeks, I'll re-listen to stuff. Something that changed everything for me with listening to sets. I hate listening to sets. I know it's something that everybody says you should do.
I'm right there with you, though. I hate I've
tried, but it's just one of those things that, like, I mean, I'll go like a good period where I do listen to sets, but I have to have an intention with the set. So I have to like listen to it for like, okay, I know I did a new punchline, so I'm just looking for that punchline. That's the only reason that and then I kind of separate myself from any emotions that I have. It's just like, I'm just looking for that punchline. I'm not even worrying about the dumb thing I said before that. Not going to get sad about this. I'm just going to because I like to try to keep myself confident and going and just go moving forward, just constantly moving forward. And I trust that if a line isn't funny, my subconscious will be like, well, that's not fun to say, so I won't say it anymore. And I will just naturally start to cut out some of the fat by redoing a joke over and over.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, editing, and I mean, that's the best way to edit is to do the joke and see what works and what doesn't, you know, figure out where you have to cut the lines. And I mean, really, you can do it while you're on stage. I mean, because you hear it right then, you know, if you say something and the crowd doesn't respond, or they respond positively or negatively, you know that, okay, we got to have a change here. But now we're gonna flip it. We're gonna get to some of the fun stuff I like to do. I've changed some of this stuff up, and I created an Art of Bombing Get Pumped comedy, or Comedy Get Pumped playlist. And so now I'm asking my guests, what's one song that gets you pumped?
It's so embarrassing. It's called Daddy's Lambo by Yellow Wolf.
Daddy's Lambo by Yellow Wolf.
Yeah.
Did I hear that right?
I think it's Yella Wolf.
Yeah,
he's
I know who he is. I know who he is. I'm not ashamed to admit I like his music.
Oh, I listen Maybe to I the trashiest be. Music. That song, I don't know, it just has like a really hot beat.
Daddy's Lambo?
Lambo, like Lamborghini.
Oh, Lambo. Oh, okay. Yeah. Daddy's Lambo. Okay. All right. Cool.
I used to listen to a lot of like Young Jeezy or Kanye West to get pumped up, because you got to listen to something that's super braggadocio where you're just like, we're the best in the world. All
keep
right.
That confidence up. Yep. Yeah. Just keep that confidence going. What's been your favorite gig so far?
Favorite gig so far? It's crazy, but I really, there's this weekly open mic that I used to do in this tiny little, it's a pretty fancy cocktail bar in Portland. And there's something really special about it. And the way that we've, like, I bring lights and a backdrop and like a stage and everything. And it just has this, it's really, really fun. And it means a lot to me to see that, like, this is a space that I've kind of created and carved a place, and it's been it was really successful before everything shut down, and it I don't know, it always meant a lot to me that I really worked hard on it, and I tried to, like, by hosting it and keeping it, having a good attitude all the time, like keeping it really positive, even though like it started at 10 o'clock on a Thursday, but it was sort of like it turned into one of these spaces where all the comedians would sort of like end their night there. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of bigger names like would swing through, and that was always really cool. And that's probably the coolest thing that I've done, in my opinion. I mean, like, I've done a lot of like other shows and like club stuff, but that little space at it's Blank Slate Bar, and is the name of the bar, and the show, we call it the Dueling Beardos, because I did have a beard at the time when we started the show, and so did my co-host, and we just kind of were playing off of the dueling banjos.
Oh, that's great. I like that. That's a great name. Well, the last thing we're gonna do, I like to play a game called Pick a Number. You're gonna pick a number between 1 and 20, and then I'm gonna ask you a corresponding question to that number. And it may be comedy related or it may not be comedy related.
All right.
So go ahead and pick your poison.
Let's do 15.
15. Whoa. Well, so just to let everybody know, he lives in Portland, Oregon now. But what's your favorite local hangout spot?
Oh, it'd have to be Blank Slate Bar. The bar that I ran that show, obviously. Yeah.
Too easy.
I know. Too easy.
Oh, finally. Go ahead and tell people where they can find you. Go ahead and play your social media, web, and all that jazz.
Yeah. So on Instagram, I am Skate Cub, and I have my three podcasts. I do a podcast with my friend Josh Floorhog that we just kind of started called Wrecking Date Night. It's where we talk about just like we find a good or bad romantic movie, and then we just tear it to pieces.
Josh is great.
And yeah, Josh is great. We always just had really entertaining conversations, and it's something that I've wanted to do for a while. So that podcast has been really fun. I do another podcast called Five Star Review with Bjorn and David. It's where we find, I go on the internet and I find crazy reviews for products, and we just, usually we say them in funny voices and just are super silly. And it's fun to kind of pull ideas and like get to know these reviewers. So we review reviews. That's what that
That's
one is.
That's funny because I actually, there's a podcast called The Review Show.
Okay.
Comedians from San Diego did that podcast, and it's essentially the same thing.
Oh, okay. I was unaware of that, but
no, I didn't say you were. I just you were like, so basically we review reviews, and like I'm like, yeah. That's literally the name of their show is the review reviews. But I think they were talking about renaming their podcast, or I don't know. They did it consistently for a while, then it went away for a while, then they were going to bring it back, and I don't know what it is. But it was an entertaining podcast.
The concept is great. Concept works, clearly. Yeah. Then my other one is Size 10 Podcast, which is on YouTube and Apple Podcasts and Spotify, all those. All three of those podcasts are on all those platforms as well. So, yeah. And then bjornrg.com is my website, and I've got like a blog on there and stuff where I unsolicitedly give comedy advice. No, I write about my experiences in comedy and stuff. It's been a fun project. So, yeah.
No, right on. Well, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks, Stan. So this was fun.
The Art of Bombing is a Blitzed Entertainment production, hosted and produced by me, Dan Bublitz Jr. The stand-up spotlight bumper was produced by Joe Nicola Music. The Art of Bombing theme music was written and performed by John Holt. All other music was used under Creative Commons licensing. All stand-up audio clips were used with permission from the comedians. You can help the podcast by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating, and a review. For previous episodes, merch, blogs, and more, please visit theartofbombingpod.com. And remember, stay safe so you can live to love.